Gangs, the new tribes.
What do you want to be when you grow up? A class of fresh-faced 12-year-olds were asked upon commencing secondary school. Their new English teacher, Mrs. Marcus, asked this question every year, and it seemed to fire the imagination of every child. Usually there was a smattering of professions, vocations and trades, along with some interesting surprises. This lot did not disappoint. It turns out they were a highly varied lot. Doctor, nurse, lawyer, judge, electrician, archaeologist, businesswoman, vet, police officer, hairdresser, actor, shop assistant. There was trouble containing their enthusiasm, with some throwing out more than one idea. A few had non-specific ambitions. I don't know, I want to travel, and I just want to go to university. All of them had opinions, some stronger than others, but opinions nonetheless. I'm particularly interested in the differences between that generation and the current one. Hopes and dreams, she replies immediately. Whether your classmates achieved those things or not is irrelevant. The important thing is you had ideas about your future. You had aspirations. When I have asked that question in recent years, instead of setting their sights on becoming a scientist, a lawyer or an artist, the best some children could think of was going on the dole, being famous, or being the boss of a gang, she says. It is a vicious circle that becomes increasingly difficult to break. It was crucial for my peers and I that we knew people who worked, and we could make decisions about our ambitions based on some knowledge. We had the benefit of seeing our parents, relatives and neighbours going to work, returning from work, talking about their jobs or their time at university. These experiences informed our ideas, ambitions and, let's face it, our expectations too. We wouldn't have dreamt of the alternative. After all, work and study were our means to get ahead and make our way in life. This lies at the very core of a gang's appeal. The aimlessness of some youth's experience is replaced by the rigid system of rules, rituals and codes of behaviour that members follow, and which gives them a purpose and adds much-needed structure to their lives. In many cases, the gang becomes a surrogate family, providing security, camaraderie and a sense of belonging. These powerful inducements exert a strange power over vulnerable teenagers. I ask Margaret what it is that can drive such a change. I've known many young boys who have turned over a new leaf, she says. The key is intervention at the grassroots level. Community programs that keep kids off the streets and involve them in pro-social activities are great deterrents. Strong after-school programs that meet children's needs for supervision are also successful in reducing attraction to gang-related activities. These cost money, though, and authorities are often not willing to spend, she explains. And sadly, some kids fall through the cracks. What chance for rehabilitation do they have, I wonder, when they cling to their gangs even in these circumstances? Admittedly, the need for survival plays a role, since those in prison rely on their fellow gang members for protection. After all, prison is no picnic and is possibly more dangerous an environment than the outside world. But even in here, there is hope. You can't make anyone succeed, but you can help them to see that success in life is possible outside of the narrow confines of the gang, says Margaret. If we give young people opportunities to bring about a change in their circumstances, they can build a happy future. Let's hope that the next time Margaret asks the question, there will be some scientists, entrepreneurs, and plumbers in the group.